Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi there, my name is Phil Rosenthal, and to me, family is everything.
Hello, and welcome to We Are Family. I'm Julia Dennison, and if we're talking about family and food, I don't think there's a more perfect guest than Phil Rosenthal. He's the award-winning creator, executive producer, writer, and host of the Netflix culinary documentary series Somebody Feed Phil, where he takes us all over the world spotlighting amazing eats and the equally amazing people who make them. And if you've seen Somebody Feed Phil, I think we're all in agreement that it sets itself apart from other food programs simply because of the pure joy, Phil, that I think that you exude in whenever you're interacting with anybody, whether it's discovering bagels in Montreal, crawfish in New Orleans, tapas in Madrid, or almost an iguana in Oaxaca. That was the episode that I just watched. Almost. Not quite. And then this is all without mentioning Everybody Loves Raymond, the long-running hilarious sitcom that Phil created and executive produced for all 9 years. You've also got a new podcast and upcoming book, which we're going to get into today amongst the family and food talk. Please welcome to We Are Family, Phil Rosenthal. Hi, Phil.
Hello. I'm so lucky to have done those things that you just mentioned, that I continue to get to do them, and now to get to meet you on this nice podcast.
Yay! We're so happy to have you. So we're recording this in the late afternoon. Have you thought about what you're having for dinner tonight? Do you plan ahead with your eating?
Oh, absolutely.
Or are you spur of the moment?
When I wake up in the morning, and sometimes days before, I work backwards from dinner. I know what I'm going to have for dinner. Right now I'm in New York, so it's a little bit of a vacation. And so I want to hit all the spots that I love in New York. I'm from New York originally, and I want to make sure I get to my favorite places or try the new places that I want to try. And so if I know like tonight is going to be somewhat Chinese, then I'm not having Chinese for lunch. So I'm working backwards from that. And then for breakfast, you know, it depends. Do I want to go lighter because I'm going to go very heavy later? All these things factor in. These are the important choices, Julia.
I love that. So well, is it going to be Chinese food tonight?
It's going to be a place called, have you ever heard of Momofuku?
Uh-huh. Just that little place in the corner. Just that, you know.
That's right. Are you in New York right now?
I am, yes.
Okay. So this is the one that's in the Time Warner Center.
Oh, okay.
It's on the third floor there. And it's, you know, one of their smaller ones. It's one of the noodle bars, but they have nightly specials and all these things. They have those beautiful buns that are either filled with pork or shrimp or mushrooms or... Oh my God, they're so delicious.
Magic.
Yeah.
I love those so much. I know. I'm over here in Queens.
Yes. Also, speaking of Chinese food, you're in one of the Chinese food meccas of the world in Queens.
Yep. Very glad.
And guess what else is from Queens? Me. I was born there.
That's a perfect segue. So where in Queens were you born?
I was born in Jamaica Hospital.
Okay. I live in Sunnyside. My daughter is 6. The benefit I feel like I love raising her in Queens is because she gets exposed to so many different foods and cultures. And I feel like you see that a lot in Somebody Feed Phil. But what was your upbringing like? I think you've joked before about how growing up, it was like a lot of bland cooking. But what was your childhood relationship with food?
I was exposed to nothing. I was exposed to my family and the friends that I had in the neighborhood and maybe in school. And that was it. And we did not have delicious food or any kind of diversity in the food. My parents both worked. Neither of them valued or had time for cooking with any kind of deliciousness attached to it. There was a comedian who once said, my mother takes the food, puts it through the deflavorizer, and then it's ready. The cuisine was by necessity cheap.
Right.
And you know, I used to joke that in our house, meat was a punishment because it was usually just the toughest, cheapest piece of meat, and it was cooked beyond recognition, gray. I didn't know what medium rare was.
Right.
I didn't have delicious food or food with any flavor, really, until I, you know, went to college. And I think I was went out with some kids, and I had some pasta with sauce. That's all I could afford. Mm-hmm. But it blew my mind at how delicious it was. I'm like, what is this? Mm-hmm. They were like, what? It's just pasta and sauce. I said, no. What are these like chopped up little white bits in the sauce? What do you mean, garlic? Yes, garlic. I never had garlic.
What is this flavor explosion in my mouth right now that is garlic?
I never had. Imagine being 17, 18 years old, living that many years without garlic.
Wow. Well, you're making up for it now.
I sure am.
But you had such a sweet relationship with your parents, and I loved seeing that on Somebody Feed Phil.
I mean, they were just the greatest, most supportive, funny, great parents. You know, not everybody's great at everything. I can't cook either, by the way. People say, hey, you have this food show and you can't cook? I'm like, yeah, I meet a lot of great chefs around the world. They can't write a sitcom. Right. So we all contribute in our way, right? My parents were phenomenal in every other way.
Mm-hmm.
Just cooking wasn't the strong suit.
Right. I think you were making mole in your Oaxaca episode, and you were like, does anybody need somebody to write a sitcom? Because that I can do.
That I can do, yes. I stink at this, obviously. But maybe if you need some funny jokes or something, maybe.
Did comedy or being creative in general come naturally and easy to you as a kid? Were you always entertaining your family early on?
Yes. In our house, if we weren't yelling, we were laughing.
Okay.
So that was just the currency of how we communicated. My father was very, very funny. In fact, I think the first time my mother saw him, he was telling jokes in a kind of amateur stage thing. He wasn't a professional comedian, but I think he was so funny that he could have if his heart was in it, you know.
Mm.
But he grew up as a tailor, and that's what his father did and his father before him. But he was truly funny, and I'm sure he passed this on to me genetically, and it's just in the blood.
Yeah.
And I imitated him, and I imitated, you know, the way my mother spoke, and I imitated the people I saw on TV, which is the way most people get started. You imitate.
Mm-hmm.
You're an amalgam of all the influences around you, and then one day you taste the soup, and it's you.
Yeah.
That becomes, you find your personality. It's an amalgam of everything around you and all your influences and everything you've experienced filtered through the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I tell everybody, you should write. Write things down just for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think, oh, I have nothing to say or I have nothing to offer. But you do.
Mm-hmm.
We're all different. And everybody's point of view is different. And everything that's happened to everybody is different.
Mm-hmm.
So all we are is everything that's happened to us filtered through the way we think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's enough to make us individual.
Yes, I love that. It's a little bit Plato's cave also in some ways.
A little bit.
That's a really good way of thinking. And I love also on the show how you have your son Ben pay tribute to your dad by telling jokes. And it's like just that, like, I don't know, that like passing along that the torch in a really fun way.
I said your grandfather's force is deep within you, my son. He's got the funny gene.
Your own family, your kids, Ben and Lily, growing up.
Yes.
And your wife, obviously, the wonderful actress, Monica Haran. What was your kind of approach to food as your own family?
Oh, well, by the time I had my own family, food was very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't really have a choice. We were going to eat everything, and we're going to try everything. I don't care if they liked it. They just had to try it.
Mm.
Right? To me, that's what life is. The tasting of everything in life is its own reward. Just like they say, the journey is its own reward. Right?
Right.
So the tasting is the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my proudest moments as a father was we took Ben. He was 3 years old. We took him to our favorite little Chinese restaurant. And we get all the things for the table, and I look over, and little three-year-old Ben has his hands in the clams and black bean sauce. We were watching him, and he's putting it in his mouth. And I look, and I see him. I said, Ben, you like it? He goes, I do. I said, That's my boy. That's my boy. Clans of black bean sauce at three.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
I love that. And I love how large a feature family is in Somebody Feed Phil. I feel like you don't really get that in a lot of food documentaries. Can you talk a little bit about the idea for the show? And like, did you go into it thinking my whole family has to be involved in this in some way?
I just thought it was who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, it's naturally part of who I am. Here's how I sold the show. I said, I'm exactly like Anthony Bourdain if he was afraid of everything. So that defined my personality and who I am as a guy. Mm-hmm. And the other things that come along with that are my parents and my wife and my children. My parents, I had put them in a movie. I made a movie called Exporting Raymond. It's a documentary. When Raymond was over, the Russians called and asked if I would help them turn my sitcom into something called Everybody Loves Kostya.
Oh my gosh.
Meaning they were going to do the Russian version of our show.
Wow.
And they invited me to come and help. And I said I would on one condition, that I could film the whole process. And I did. But the best part of that movie is I was at a Russian family's house for dinner and I was talking to the grandparents. And I asked them what they do, and they like to use the computer. I said, you know how to use the computer? Yes. I said, you know how to Skype or Zoom or Skype at the time, mm-hmm. right? They said, yes. I said, this I have to see, because I came from the world where my parents didn't really know about this stuff. So to see these older Russian people, they knew how to Skype. They said, who should we call? I said, call my parents. And they called my parents. My parents just happened to be up in New York. And it's the best scene in the movie.
Oh my gosh, I gotta see that.
It's the funniest, greatest thing. Luckily, the Russian people spoke English. And luckily, my parents were awake when they called. And they did it, and it was hysterical. And when I saw this in the movie theater and the laughs that it was getting, mm-hmm. I never forgot this. Mm. So Skyping with my parents in Somebody Feed Phil, I was going to do that for a couple of reasons. One, if you come from the world of sitcoms and comedy, you never forget when something got a big laugh and you want that again. So they're good. Second, you're doing a show. You want funny characters, right?
Yeah.
You just want, you look for that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want a formula, but you want little touchstones through the show that, you know, people can look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Skype or Zoom home is the modern day equivalent of the postcard.
It's true.
So it made sense. If I'm doing a show for you to get you to travel on your family vacation, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be part of it. You're going to Skype home. Hey, Ma, look where I am. Look what I ate today. Look at this. Look, I turned the computer to show you. I show you the outside. Look where I am. Look, here's what I ate. Look at this. Right? And then you check in with them and you get their news from home too. Mm-hmm. That's part of travel.
Yes.
It's a fun part.
I love that. In real time.
In real time.
You don't have to wait for the postcard to arrive.
That's right.
I love that.
But my parents, you know, what's funny is all the years that they did the show with me, I would say, Mom, you wanna hear what I ate today? She's not particularly. I said, you understand what the show is, right?
Like it's literally called Somebody Feed Phil.
You know what the show is. By the way, she didn't know the name of the show either.
Had she just never heard it, or did she think people were just like throwing around the phrase, somebody's got a feed Phil over here?
She would just forget. I think we did a promo once for Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and we thought the funny part would be them trying to find the show on Netflix, like doing the search.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just trying to figure out how Netflix works. We thought that was going to be the funny part. Mm-hmm. No, the funny part was they don't know the name of their son's TV show. Who's feeding somebody? Who's feeding Phil? What does Phil want?
Someone give something to Phil? Phil has a need?
Somebody. Phil will starve if nobody feeds him?
Everyone loves Phil? Oh my God.
Yeah, that they're familiar with.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny, but it's such a metaphor. I feel like we're always trying to be seen by our parents, right?
You got it. You got it. But, you know, I leave it all in. Because I know it's relatable.
Mm-hmm.
After doing Everybody Loves Raymond for 9 years, you start to hit on things almost by accident
mm-hmm.
that you realize are relatable to the audience. And that turns out to be the most important part. Because if the audience relates to you, that means they're connected to you.
Yeah.
And they're connected to the show and to the situations. And once you're relatable to them, once they believe you as real people, right, mm-hmm. and identify with you, doesn't matter. They could be from, I would get letters during Raymond from Sri Lanka that said, that's my mother. Because the more specific you get in your writing and your characterizations, the more specific it turns out, the more universal it becomes, not the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that if you write vaguely and try to appeal to everybody. No.
Right.
We relate to specifics in life.
And be vulnerable about it.
Yes. And even if your specific isn't mine, I'm going to relate to you just because you have a specific.
Right.
Because I have specifics.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And you know that they're being, you're being honest with each other, which is that honesty. And I feel like you touch on this in the show also, just that connection that people make over food.
Yes.
And I think you sort of say, there's a sort of beautiful way of putting it, just that like everybody needs to eat and everyone needs to kind of come around a table. And like, it's a great, the great, you know.
The great connector.
Yeah.
It's the great connector. Food is the great connector. And then for me, laughs mm-hmm. are the cement.
Right. So food plus laughs.
Right.
That's the chef's kiss.
You got it. That's it. And so if you and I are meeting for the first time, here we are over Zoom. But wouldn't this be so much better if we were at the table eating something?
Can I tell you, my stomach literally just growled. I feel like my stomach's like, what are you doing?
Yes.
Talking to Phil Rosenthal, not eating.
And I find when I meet someone new, it takes a little bit of the awkwardness away from the new meeting because we're eating.
Yes.
And not only is it something that everybody does and can relate to,
right.
but we like it.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Listen, we all have to do other things that we don't like. You know, it's the show's not called Somebody Fold Laundry with Phil. That wouldn't be fun.
You're making me laugh because I can't see it off camera. I have my big old basket of laundry that needs folding right now. So I could,
oh, you can
I could start folding right now and make it Somebody Fold Laundry.
You know
with
what?
Phil.
You're not nervous at all. You've done this for a while. But if you were nervous, I would tell you, go fold that laundry and talk to me because it's an activity that you're familiar with and you concentrate on that and you don't worry about, oh, I'm on TV or I'm on a podcast or
right.
I'm on, right? Or meeting something new.
That's true. I love that. I'm going to start folding laundry in more life situations. hold on. Let me go get my laundry. Hold the phone.
Yes, you got job interview. You're nervous. Bring your laundry.
So now you have a book coming out this fall, appropriately called.
I'm so excited.
Somebody Feed Phil, the book.
Somebody Feed Phil, the book.
I love it.
The publisher said, you left out the comma. I said, no, you left out your sense of humor.
I love that. So what can we expect from the book?
The book is a nice companion book.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the stories that you would want of how we got started and what we do and what we look for and how we make the show. And what the show's about and all the places. And I have something to say about every place that we went, my real feelings. So all that, but here's the best part of the book.
Yeah.
The most requested recipes from the first four seasons of the show. There's 60 of them from around the world. I think this is the best cookbook ever.
Oh my gosh.
Because of that.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
It has recipes?
It's mostly recipes.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
With big photos. And if you get the audiobook, it's me reading what I can read, all the stories, and then the recipes you get on your computer with the pictures.
What? Okay.
So it's both. It's multimedia.
I like that. I want to try that out.
I like it too.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. Yeah. That's really cool. So do you have a particularly memorable meal that you've had with your family that you think back and think like, that was just wonderful? I feel like you've had so many meals. You're like the one I'm having tonight.
There's one that's springing to mind. I want to say it's like a 20th anniversary dinner in Paris.
Ooh. Yeah.
And the kids were with us and it was just magnificent.
What did you eat? Do you remember?
I think roast chicken was there. I think big plates of French fries that only, you know, a Paris bistro can do perfectly.
They do. And roast chicken, they just, the simple stuff, they do so perfectly.
The simple, that's my favorite stuff.
I know,
right?
Yes.
It's the thing, here's my favorite kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
The food we know very well from childhood, maybe even, elevated to the best of that you ever had. That's my favorite food experience.
Yes. Like the best hot dog you've ever had in your life.
That's right. You remember that. And it has, it then takes a special place in your heart.
Right.
Because you loved it as a kid, or you loved it your whole life, even. And now you're having the best one.
Right. And sometimes I feel like the best hot dog could be the best hot dog because you had it at a memorable moment in time, watching a specific baseball game, seeing the Mets win, whatever. Or it's something really fancy. And like, there's a lot of these kind of like, I think Korean hot dog shops popping up with like really elaborate toppings. I feel like the, the what makes it memorable could be a whole spectrum of things.
It's really fun though, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes your childhood memories are attached to terrible foods that you then love also.
Right. That's right.
And taste has nothing to do with it.
Right.
I'm using it as an example, the Dodger dog. It's a terrible hot dog.
Okay.
It's actually terrible. It's the shame of Los Angeles. It's a limp noodle of a hot dog with no snap.
Oh.
It tastes like kind of old bologna. It's just a terrible, limp, terrible thing. And they'll never, ever change it because it's so beloved by people because their dad took them to the ball game when they were a kid and that's what they ate.
Right. It's nostalgia. Yeah. I love that. Memories are so kind of embaked in what you eat. So talking a little bit about Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
We are obviously a podcast about family, but that is so much a show about family.
Of course.
It's the whole thing. So what were some important things that you felt like you wanted to depict about family life when you were making the show? What'd you say?
You know, when I was growing up, we had shows like The Brady Bunch, right? And that to me was like, oh, what an idealized, beautiful family that is. Everyone gets along. They don't fight. And if they fight, it's for a second. And then mom comes in and everybody's sweet. They don't yell. Right? They don't, they're nice. And I thought, oh, that's so sweet. It's not my family.
Right.
So I thought, what if we did a show that was more like my family? And there had been shows to, as an example, you know, All in the Family was one of the great classic, as politically astute as it was and satirical as it was. The reason I think it connected with people wasn't because of the politics so much or the topical humor of the day. It really was, you connected to it because their characters were so relatable and were a real family with yelling and with, you know, arguments and all kinds of things. Then comes, you know, other things like Roseanne, which was the original Roseanne show. It almost held up a mirror to America. That's what a living room really looks like. That's how people really are. I remember a season where the teen daughter didn't talk the whole season to them. Could that be more relatable?
Oh, completely. Completely.
I mean, that's real. So all these shows, you know, they influence me. And I just, you know, I based Everybody Loves Raymond, obviously, on Ray's family. He really had, you know, twin boys, an older daughter. The family lived close by. The parents, the brother really lived with them. But what I didn't know about the characters of them, I filled in with the characters from my family. And because we were so specific about the characters and about the situations, 90% of what you saw on that show came from something that happened to me or to Ray or to one of the other writers. And if you work for me, I would say, go home, get in a fight with your husband, come back in and tell me about it. That's how the show works.
That's fantastic.
And so because of that, we had dinner home every night. We didn't stay late.
I was going to ask you about that.
Because that's where the stories were coming from. That's where the stories come from.
Okay, so I'm a kid who grew up in showbiz. My mom's a costume designer. My dad's an actor. My mom worked on Law & Order basically the whole entire run.
Wow.
But
yes,
we ate so late. And it would be like, we'd be so lucky if she came home.
Right.
So I know how hard that is in show business to make sure that everybody is home eating.
I planned the schedule so we could do it.
Obviously, it must have felt like the show was better off for that. And there must have been a much better, you know, it kind of fosters that feeling of family amongst the cast and crew.
How can you write about real life if you don't have one?
Yes, that's true.
Right? So that was very, very important to me. I worked on many shows before mine where that wasn't a priority. And we were there till 3 in the morning. Nobody saw anybody. right? Except the other guys in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's no way to live. I didn't want to live that way.
No.
So we worked very hard so that we wouldn't have to work.
I like that. How is the craft service tables at Everybody Loves Raymond?
Legendary. Legendary. The craft service at Raymond was the best in the business.
I bet.
I made sure of that. Because, first of all, you want to pay people a living wage. Mm-hmm. That's a good way of showing that you love them. Second, and the whole idea is to create a family.
Mm-hmm.
A family of people that you personally want to spend time with, and because you're going to see a lot of these people.
Mm-hmm.
So why not be nice?
Yeah.
So good salary, be nice. And then what's the other way to show people you care about them? What if you had great food around the set
mm-hmm.
and in the office? What if there was great food? Because I worked on shows where there wasn't.
No.
I once worked on a show, and this was a popular show.
Yeah.
I won't tell you the name, but it was a show you heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And a memo came around. We noticed some of you are coming into the kitchen in the morning and putting milk on your cereal.
Mm-hmm.
The cereal is for snacks. The milk is for coffee.
Stop.
We do not provide breakfast for you. Please do not put milk on your cereal.
Oh, my God.
And this was a memo sent to everybody in this office of a hit show.
Oh, my God.
And I look at it like in disbelief, the way you are now. And I thought to myself then and there, if I'm ever lucky enough to have my own show, we're going to have milk on our cereal.
Yeah, huh? Like, I'm like, what happens if you eat the cereal snack and then you drink a glass of milk? Like, is that breaking rules if they come together in your mouth? Oh, my God, that's ridiculous.
It's bananas. There was a show I heard about where if you had a title of producer or above,
mm-hmm.
you could have the name brand soda.
Stop.
In the fridge. If you were below this title, you got the store brand.
Oh my God.
Knockoff sodas.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
How cheap is
that?
That's
ridiculous. No, at Law and Order, they had a vending machine with like all free sodas. That basically made my childhood right there.
That's right. By the way, my kids
loved
coming to the set
yeah.
because they were getting, you know, anything they wanted to eat.
Yeah, of course. How old are they now? They're young adults now at this point, right?
They are 27,
mm-hmm.
my son, Ben, and my daughter's 24.
Got it. So, yeah, what kind of parent do you feel like you were to them? And did you and Monica very different on how you would parent?
You'd have to ask them.
That's true.
I think we tried to be nice and good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you always feel like you're failing.
Yeah, that's true.
Always.
That's the conundrum of being a parent.
Oh, my God. He's crying. Oh, it's like that. What was the Pixar movie where the core memory is formed and you can't do anything about
it? Yes, that's Soul.
What was the...
No, yes.
Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, what a brilliant...
Brilliant, yeah.
...depiction of that, because every parent feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. We try as hard as you can. There's going to be emotional scarring. You just can't do anything about it. They'll have to work it out in therapy later like you did.
That's what I say. It's like our job to give them things to talk about in therapy. They need things to talk about. So that's
yes,
what we're here for.
I'm very sorry. I'm sorry for whatever.
Oh.
But we try.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your new podcast, Naked Lunch? It's co-hosted with your friend, David Wild, right?
David Wild and I, yeah, we've been friends for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the first nice review about Everybody Loves Raymond in Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, and so then you were like, you're my new best friend.
Well, I just called him to thank him. And, you know, we just started talking. It just felt like brothers from way back,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just sometimes you have a connection with people.
Mm-hmm.
I said, let's have lunch. And we've been having lunch ever since. And the great thing is, you know, I have these friends in show business and comedy, and he has friends in show business too, but he has a whole side of himself that knows everybody in music, everyone. And so he'd bring some people like that to lunch. And at the end of every lunch, I would always say, we should have been taping this.
Right.
And so now we are.
I love that.
And it is, again, over food. It's over lunch. So sometimes you'll hear the chewing, but it's okay.
Making those connections over food.
Yes.
So we always ask everybody what, you know, it's obviously been a really tough past couple of years to be families and to kind of see each other. And you've been so great about mastering, you know, connection through Zoom. What are your kind of like hopes for your family for the next couple years, would you say?
Oh, that's a great question. I think if COVID taught us anything, right, it's how precious every moment with people. I was going to say people you love, but it's people in general.
Mm-hmm.
That we need each other.
Yep.
We're interdependent as a species.
Mm-hmm.
We need that. That was the, you know, not counting the real tragedies of COVID where you actually literally lost people.
Mm-hmm.
But you lost the connections to people. Mm-hmm. Zoom is fine, but it doesn't cut it, right?
Oh, yeah.
We know that. It makes it all sweeter now, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
My joke was when this is over, when COVID's over, we're going to be so grateful for life to be returned to us, right? And that gratitude, that feeling is going to last 2 weeks.
I feel like,
and then we're going to take it all for granted again.
I think that's true.
Until the next terrible thing.
Oh, God.
I'm saying to you, my message is don't take it for granted. You see what can happen.
Yes.
We have to treasure these moments that we have where we travel, mm-hmm. where we eat with our friends, where we eat with our family, where we hug our family and our friends. That's the message, right? Go out, explore, make friends. That's the key to life.
I love that. And now I'm very hungry. And I feel like that's the perfect way to end a podcast episode with Phil Rosenthal. Thank you so much for coming on We Are Family. This has been so nice to chat. And I hope your dinner is delicious tonight.
Thank you, Julia. Oh, I know it will be.
Good, good, good.
I'm rarely disappointed.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to follow We Are Family on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen so you don't miss an episode. And we'd love your feedback. If you could rate this podcast and leave us a review, we'd really appreciate it. You can also find us online at parents.com/wearefamilypodcast. Tune in to all our episodes during this season with Jack Black, Phil Rosenthal, Tamara Mowry Housley, and Michael Ian Black. And if you missed any of our previous episodes in seasons 1 and 2, they're waiting for you right now. This season of We Are Family is presented by me, Julia Dennison, and produced by Jim Hankey. Editing is by Jason Mack, and thanks also to our production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Sav, and Danielle Roth.